I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlanta Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA. And since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons, Phil and Dino, have the lists of such groups and their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Rocco will read their preamble.
I'm Rocco, alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contribution. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Please join me in the Serenity Prayer. God. Carl will read the steps.
Hey, that's perfect. Hello, everyone. My name is Carl, and I'm an alcoholic. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn the will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact natures of our wrong. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Excuse me. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
Randy will read the traditions.
Hi, I'm Randy. I'm an alcoholic. Okay. 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers followed by our information break, and then our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Lauren.
Hi, I'm Lauren, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm very scared. I'm a member of the Atlantic Group. My sobriety date is January 11th, 2008. My sponsor is Christine L., and I'm currently working Step 9. I want to thank Debbie for asking me to speak. It's really crazy because a year ago when I was sitting out there, I would have never, ever thought I'd be standing here, and I probably would have canceled if somebody asked me to speak. So I've changed a lot. I grew up in Western Pennsylvania near Pittsburgh, and I started drinking pretty young, probably when I was in fifth grade. And drinking worked for a really long time. It worked in high school. I never really had any consequences. When I got to college, I had my first blackout, and I was really, really terrified because I didn't know anybody that ever had a blackout before. I had a boyfriend, and if you would have asked me if I would ever cheat on him, I would have said no. I mean, there was no way that I would ever do that. But I blacked out, and I did. And when I came to, I was completely, completely amazed at what I did. I mean, I could not believe that I would ever do that. And I stopped drinking at that point and did other substances for a while because I could remember what I was doing. So I started drinking again my senior year of college, and this is when it started to pick up a lot. I started having blackouts pretty often. I started doing a lot of crazy things, and it started to be kind of like my, what I was. You know, everybody would tell the funny stories about what I was doing, and I kind of liked that. So I didn't mind getting drunk and doing, you know, going to get tattoos or piercings or doing really, you know, absurd things where I'm not going to even talk about that here. But, I mean, really, really things that were not something that I should be doing. And towards probably around the age of 23, things started to get worse. I started doing things that were really, I started feeling really, really bad. It wasn't funny anymore. People weren't laughing. They were taking care of me when I was drinking rather than, I was more of a nuisance. I had to be babysat. So I did a lot of geographics in 1 year. I moved from Pittsburgh to Johnstown, Pennsylvania, to DC, to Charlottesville, to New York, and that's all in 6 months. I came to New York, and I could finally drink the way I wanted to drink. I didn't have to worry about driving. Everything was open late. And I thought, you know, this is perfect. I don't know anybody, so I can completely reinvent myself. I mean, pretty much within 2 weeks, I was doing the same stuff. I was blacking out with coworkers and, you know, just throwing up at the bar, just doing really, really stupid things. I think my bottom lasted about 4 years. It was basically me living the same day over and over again. I met my current boyfriend during a blackout, and it was fun at first. You know, we would drink and, you know, have a good time, and I would wake up the next day and be a little hungover and go to work, and, you know, it was fine. But as my feelings started to grow for him, I started to drink over those feelings. If I was jealous, I would drink so that I could pass out and not feel those feelings. Or if he was going out with his friends, I didn't want to deal because I thought he was going to cheat on me. So I would drink to pass out. But the problem was I drank, blacked out, then pass out. So when I was in the blackout, I would call him, 50 times, call his parents, text his friends, punch him in the face. I mean, whatever it was. I made up stories. I basically made up stories in my head. And so if I was at a bar and he was sitting next to me the whole time and there was one other girl in the room across the room, I would think about cheating, and all of a sudden I was sure he just cheated on me. I was completely insane. And I really, really started to hate my life. And it was the same. I was living the same day over and over again. So, things just kept getting worse and worse, and it wasn't fun for him anymore. I would wake up every morning and I would ask, I don't know when it was ever fun, but I would ask him, are we okay? Some days we were, most days we weren't. And a few months before I quit my drinking, it was Halloween and I was at my worst. And I woke up and he was gone the next morning. I guess manipulated it or whatever. He came back, and soon after, I ended up coming in. I had no experience with AA, so I don't even know how I got here, but one morning I woke up and I went to work and I Googled AA. And that morning was the day he was going to leave me, and I didn't know. So I guess that's a higher power moment. It's really odd because I never thought I had a drinking problem. I thought I was nuts and, couldn't control myself or had to be in a hospital or something, but I never thought it was drinking. So I came. My first meeting was the 79th Street workshop. Christine, who's my sponsor, was the speaker that night, and I completely related. And, I thought I was coming in to drink or be able to drink easier or get my drinking under control or something. I didn't know I was quitting. And the fact that she had me call her the next day helped me not drink that night. So, it's amazing that I'm even here. And I never thought I could ever go a week, let alone a year. I think listening to the suggestions of people is very important. A lot of times, I didn't like what they were suggesting, and I didn't want to do it, but I believed that everybody was happy, and I did it anyways. And my life is 100% different. My relationship is actually good. I haven't woke up once this year and asked if we were okay. My job, I couldn't even work a year ago. I had a job, but I never did my work. And I actually can do my work today, which is absolutely crazy. And I'm actually getting complimented on it, which I've never done. It's never happened. Before they were trying to get rid of me. I mean, it's amazing. This is so weird. I was just talking about this before the meeting. Even my cat has changed. My cat, she's so much nicer to me when before, I don't know. It's odd. I guess for the newcomer, I believed it worked because I saw people that were happy, but I wasn't, so sure. But I'm here to tell you that it completely does work. You just have to listen to everybody's suggestions and get a sponsor and listen to the sponsor and do the stuff even if you don't want to and start reading the book and work the steps. I sat on my 4-step for a very long time. And it was very painful, but I did it. I think I needed the pain to do it. And it was hard, but when I was done, I felt awesome. So what else? I have a commitment. That's also very important. It helps you meet people in the program because this can be a little bit intimidating walking into a room full of people that all know each other. And what else? I guess I can talk about more things, how my life has changed. Cool, 1 minute. So that totally works. I guess all I have to say is that if you're new, give it time. Give it at least 90 days. Give it 6 months. Because, I mean, I wasn't going to even give it a month, and I just kept coming back. And eventually you get it, and you'll hold on to it and pass it on to somebody else. Thank you.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Mike.
Thanks, Marty. Hi, I'm Mike. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is August 25th, 2006. My sponsor is John. I'm working on steps 9, 10, 11, and 12. And Atlantic Group is my home group. Okay, moving right along. I'm really glad to be here and see a lot of people in their usual seats. You know, that makes me feel comfortable. And when I'm really glad to be here, I mean it. Because I should be dead. And I don't just say that because the things that I've done, like I've been in 7 alcohol-related car accidents, 4 of which I was driving. I think the worst one was a road trip to Seaside Heights where I woke up after the car accident happened and I opened my eyes and all I saw was white and it was the hood of the car resting on the windshield and I T-boned a pickup truck at an intersection and nothing happened. We all walked away, but to think, you know, I've woken up in the middle of the night grabbing my hair. Thinking of the possibilities of what could have happened, and things that I did when I was drinking, like burglarizing places. I mean, I could have been shot by entering somebody's home by the owner or the police. I could have died from getting HIV. I had sex for money. I shared syringes. I got robbed at gunpoint twice, where I was actually, what I would do is, in the good days, these are the good days I'm talking about, I'd go to the bar, and by midnight, I'd pull the Irish goodbye and disappear, and I'd go to shady parts of Brooklyn, and I was so drunk. This guy came up to me, put a 25 to my chest, right on my heart, placed it, and he said, "Give me your money." And I was so drunk, I told him no. And we played cat and mouse. It happened in an intersection, lots of people around. I don't know why. He gave up and walked away. Yeah. The true story, you know? And that's what I'm telling you. Like, and the overdose between alcohol and what the big book calls high powered sedatives. I did a lot of high powered sedatives. woke up 3 times to EMTs sticking syringes in me with adrenaline shots to revive me. From what I hear, I was blue. My lips were blue. One time, a police officer woke me up in the middle of a winter. It was morning. I was out from the night before, and I was passed out on Avenue B and East 6th Street, laid out, and the cop was poking me with a stick. And I woke up. I was freezing. And, you know, so I'm glad to be here. Stan, I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be anywhere. I remember having a good childhood and sheltered, and you know, my parents did a great job, and I remember, I think, like when I was a teen and I started to get some independence, I wanted to go out and experience the life and experience the world, and I sought out kids that were having fun, and the kids who were having the most fun were the kids who were drinking, and so right away, I tried to be friends with them. I started smoking cigarettes. I'm not saying cigarettes is a gateway drug, but I'm just like saying that it's showing my inability to make bad decisions, my ability to make bad decisions. And so I started smoking right away. And consequences began immediately, although they were just like straws, like on the camel's back, just the beginning, like, excessive absenteeism and failing classes and staying out all night and fighting with my family. It wasn't enough. I mean, I was just getting started, you know, and the good times lasted, for about 3 years till the end of high school, till I was about 18, when my friends would graduate. Some graduated, went to college, some got jobs. They all moved on. And I still wanted to party, and that was the life for me, and that's what I wanted to do, and I continued to do so. And my consequences just kept on building up, and they were noticeable. I lost weight. I never had a job. Let me see what else. I never graduated high school because I had to, for my first arrest, I had to do 10 days at Rikers Island. I would guesstimate that I was arrested in my career so far 20 times, and four times doing county, some two times probation, some community service. I'm pretty sure that when I got sober, the crime rate in my neighborhood dropped dramatically. It was assaults, and I'm not trying to be funny. I'm not trying to brag. I'm just telling you how it is. It was assaults, GTAs, possession of stolen property, robbery, just a list. It just goes on. Everything just kept on working. Speeding up to the end, I was living in a rooming house, $75 a week, with a bunch of people with the same disease as me, the whole house. It was the only place I could live. I was on welfare. I got a check every 2 weeks. I got Medicaid and food stamps. Whenever I received that money, it was gone within 24 hours. The grocery store on the corner gave me 80 cents on the dollar for my food stamps. Cash, that was gone one day. I had a cash-paying job at the end. I was a landscaper. It didn't matter if I showed up or not. My boss paid me in cash, and I can borrow money from him during the week. And that's where my life was. And in between, I was just committing crimes at night. It was when I was brought into the office. I was on an outpatient alcohol and substance abuse program where the chief of staff brought me into her office and was trying to tell me that I needed help. And I was trying to tell her I was just an occasional user on the weekends and stuff like that. And, yeah, I know. And she took out my file, and she had everything documented on what I did that year. And I just broke down and cried, and I agreed to go into treatment, into detox and rehab, and that's where I first heard the message of Alcoholics Anonymous 13 years ago. I spent the next 10 years coming in and out of the rooms. I can tell you that my life got good when I stayed sober for periods of time, and my life got bad when I drank. It led me back to the same place, as the book says, incomprehensible demoralization. That was me. And I have 2.5 years now. It's the longest that I've ever been sober. And I do think I have it because I have a program of recovery through the 12 steps of AA, which protects me from the first drink. Not only protects me from the first drink, it has improved my life. It's a program where I don't drink, that I trust in my higher power, that I clean my clean house, that I make amends to other people, that I'm of service to other people, and I have a fellowship of other alcoholics. That's how I stay sober. I didn't do it right away like that. I mean, you know, my first year I went to meetings. I didn't drink. But I didn't do it right. It took a year of living without a program where I couldn't live without it, with alcohol, and I couldn't live without it before I actually hit a bottom where I was going to drink, kill myself, or do the work, and I did the work. And coming to Atlanta Group was amazing. You guys, I describe it as being part of the Verizon network, because I'm like... Like when I'm here, like, you know, the commercial, and then you cut to the wide part, and there's like 1,000 people behind them. So that's the way I see it. So to the newcomer, keep coming to meetings, get a sponsor, and life will get better. Thank you.